This year's donations might go to, say, the geology department.
Oh dear, not the dirt people.
Geology is the study of pressure and time. That's all it takes, really.
What kind of activity has turned the lake massive? Look, I'm just a geologist. I like rocks. I love rocks.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Geology Final Cast. My name is Steve.
Hey, everybody. It's Chris.
Oh, boy. Welp, I'm Jesse, and you're here.
Yeah.
Yes, all this is true. Yes.
Yes.
Just stating facts.
There you are, man. You're there.
That's what we do here at the premier geology podcast. It's just nothing but fact stating.
Yep. Rock solid.
Aha. Oh.
Did you get my pun?
Yes. Nope. Let's rewind. No one could fault us at least 30 seconds in for not telling the truth.
No, that is true.
Is that another pun?
Sometimes it's several minutes before we get to the point of our podcast. So, but I'm going to break tradition. Today, we're going to be talking about, drum roll please, Jesse's upcoming vacation. And everybody listening is now tuning off. But wait, before you tune off or turn off or click stop or what, I don't know what you call turning off a podcast. Tell Alexa to stop. There you go. Jesse actually has a pretty cool family vacation planned out west to Grand Canyon National Park and Bryce Canyon National Park and
Zion Canyon.
There you go.
Let's release this after I get back, though.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I'll wait till you get back.
Are you worried about the mobs of people who are going to accost you at the park?
You'd be surprised.
Oh my God, it's him.
he's just like us.
Yeah.
At the national parks.
People asking you nonstop questions about the rocks.
Well, that's why we need to talk about it tonight. Because I will admit, I'll be the first to admit that my knowledge of at least Bryce and Zion is very low.
Oh, yeah.
In the Grand Canyon, we'll say it's fuzzy at best.
Yeah.
All right. Well, here's our fuzzy podcast on the Grand Canyon. Yeah.
So welcome to every podcast. Fuzzy facts at best.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Is that where you want to start? Grand Canyon?
That's what we're staying on. I didn't think that we were going anywhere else.
Besides all right. So Grand Canyon is in what state, Chris?
I'm not going there.
Oh, this year, all right. It's in Arizona. I like entirely or for the most part, I think.
Entirely.
The whole thing's in Arizona. Yes.
What's the river, Chris?
It's Colorado River.
There we go. All right. I thought I was throwing up a softball.
I am not going to the Grand Canyon on this vacation.
You know the geology. I feel like you know it better than any of us.
Yeah. It is gorgeous. Catch another pun.
What's the etymology of Colorado? Do you know that?
No. Colorado?
Yeah, I think is it Spanish? I'm gonna
Colorado. Yeah. I don't know.
Where did Colorado get its name? Presumably named from the river bearing the name.
it's Spanish. Okay. It's Spanish for color red.
Oh,
okay. There you go.
Because
the Spanish word meaning rad or ruddy, describing the color of the stream. Various places where the red earth.
The red sandstone, yeah.
Okay.
In the Colorado River, yeah. So the red Colorado, you think about like red rocks. Ah.
Ah.
Yeah.
So
I see what they did there.
Yeah. So Red Rocks, Colorado is pretty redundant.
Ah.
Yes. Ish.
What is
ish? But yeah, so the Grand Canyon.
How about this? Before we move on, another fun fact. What was Colorado called before it was Colorado?
Now, the state or the river?
The state.
Because I was going to say, which one was named first?
The river was named first. And
okay.
According to what I just read from...
Yeah. Well, Colorado was part of Mexico. Was Colorado part of Mexico?
No. Probably was.
Yeah.
Are Colorado, you talking about
its Native American name?
I don't know what the Native American name was.
Yeah. You tell me. Tell me what the answer you were looking for.
Jefferson Territory.
Oh. Huh.
Yeah, I didn't know that. It became Colorado weird. Around the same time as Denver City was established.
Huh. Denver. Because there was a 51st state that was proposed called Jeffersonville.
Yeah. And like Northern California.
Northern California, like between Oregon and Northern California.
Yeah. Southern Oregon, Northern California. Yeah. And there are people up there who are like the state of Jeff. They have like their own flag and stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. You know, this is another great fact of Colorado here. Initially proposed names for the territory included Kelowna, Osage, and Idaho. So I guess they recycled Idaho with whoever was naming these territories. Oh, we didn't use Idaho over there. I really like Idaho. We'll use it over here.
Is Idaho the one that's... Oh, it's sort of
Colorado. It's that one, yeah.
No, I'm aware of its location. is that the one where the word they don't really know the meaning of it?
The meaning of Idaho?
Yeah.
Some dude kept proposing it until it stuck.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Oh, here. However, Republicans came to power nationally in 1860, the Jefferson Territory delegate to Congress, Beverly Williams, decided to go with the name Idaho, which he was told was the Native American word meaning gem of the mountains.
Yeah, but I think that's like made up. I don't think it's actually like a Shoshone word.
Nice.
Beverly Williams was told, somebody told Beverly Williams that it means gem of the mountains.
Yeah. Huh. I always like the state of Wyoming is named after Wyoming, Pennsylvania. Right? Because the really? Wyoming Valley in northeastern Pennsylvania was, yeah. So it's like the Wyoming Valley is there's the bend in, I guess it's the Susquehanna up in northern Pennsylvania. In Wyoming, it means like the flat of the river, the plain of the river. And so they have this plain state out in Wyoming. And they're like, all right,
how about
Wyoming
that?
It is. Yeah.
Interesting.
I'm just saying, you know, Pennsylvania leads the way again.
Again.
By the way, so to fact check what the story that I just told, completely false, apparently.
Nice.
Fuzzy facts.
Fuzzy. This is what happens when you don't do your background research and you go off on a tangent that's not on what you're
talking about. We're also not talking about Colorado or Wyoming or Idaho in this podcast today.
How states got their names today. Welcome.
Yeah, so let's see. The story was that Jesse was right. The Idaho is a Native American term, and this is not true. The name Idaho was made up in the mid-1800s. Just made up.
I thought that was the case. Yeah, so anyway, welcome to the geography boring cast.
GIS, am I right?
Tune in next week when we go over the geography of Guatemala.
Yeah, we start talking about the three color problem or whatever, where like state colors and how all the states touch each other. Anyway, there's a whole geography problem about that.
All right, so Grand Canyon consists of 1.2 million acres, which is pretty big.
1.2 million.
I mean,
how many elephants would fit in the Grand Canyon? Here we go.
Good question. While you calculate that, they receive about over 4 million visitors a year. It was designated the World Heritage Site by UNESCO in 1979. Neither of you were born. I was there at the ceremony. It was beautiful. I was one.
Yeah. Beautiful.
I've been to every UNESCO celebration since 1979. That's a bold baseline.
See those old timey photos? They're all black and white, but you're somewhere in the background looking like you do today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Traveler?
Holding up my flannel cast sticker.
All right. I got the elephant thing. Thank you, ChatGPT. Grand Canyon is approximately 277 miles long, up to 18 miles wide, over a mile deep. Estimated volume 4.17 trillion cubic meters. African elephant, volume of 5.5 cubic meters.
5.5.
That's what the all-knowing ChatGPT says.
I thought we were 4.5 before, but carry on. You're right. Carry on.
Don't shoot the messenger here, you know.
No. Nope.
I'm not doing the math.
I'm not going to question my future overlord. All right, here we go. No.
We'll go Price's Right rules.
Ooh.
Steve, what's your guess? How many elephants at more than 4 trillion cubic meters and an African elephant is 5.5 cubic meters?
So I'm guessing 900 million African elephants.
900 million. Okay.
That's a lot of elephant, a lot of pachyderms.
900 million, says Jesse. Steve, excuse me.
Yeah. Wait, give me the conversion rate again.
Oh, here we go. Little more than 4 trillion cubic meters.
That's a lot of trillions.
5.5 cubic meters per African elephant.
Oh yeah, Steve's probably close.
Or am I off by order of magnitude? Now I'm worried about it. Carry on.
Yeah.
What's your answer?
Yeah.
Jesse, what are you going with? Were you on Price is Right rules?
Oh boy. Geez Louise. Let me do 500 billion.
Winner, Jesse Thornburg. Winner, winner, chicken dinner by 758 billion elephants.
That's a lot of elephants.
A lot of elephants.
I just got a thought about if they all went to the bathroom at once. It's like
what would the erosion rate of the canyon be at that point?
Then the Colorado River wouldn't be red anymore.
Do you know there was a famous, depending on how you look at fame or what you consider famous, but there was a maybe it's sort of like infamous now, but I guess in like the 1890s there was or the 1880s there was this conference where city managers were at the time in the late 19th century got together to talk about the problem of horse poop, because there was a horse manure and they were factoring in how big cities were getting that, you know, they were like, by 1950, you know, the streets will be 3 feet deep with horse manure, because like they're factoring the rate of growth for cities versus how many horses they need, you know. But it's funny because, you know, we obviously cars were invented. And so, but it was them trying to like forecast into the future, like what to do with all this horse manure, because cities are growing at X rate and we're going to need this many more horses to account for the people. There's going to be too much horse manure by 1950.
Wow. So
just one of those things that's kind of funny in retrospect, but that's what my mind initially, whenever I think of a lot of large animals together at once, I think about them pooping. No one else.
That's what happens.
Well, just to be clear, you did say peeing first, but
no, I said going to the bathroom.
You're right. You you say go to the bathroom. My head went tinkle.
Yeah,
not pooping.
Yeah,
I guess just because of the river and whatnot. I just assumed. Anyway, that just goes to show you how friggin' big this canyon is. And I've been there. It is insane.
So we should go. Let's start from the beginning. Let's start with the Grand Canyon getting discovered, or I guess. Well, I don't. Let me rephrase that. I don't want to say discovered. How about first described scientifically?
Okay.
Gentleman by the name of Clarence Edward Dutton. This guy, Dutton, Clarence Dutton, he did a lot more than the Grand Canyon. I did not, as I'm looking up about this, he not only did he first, you know, describe, I guess he wrote the first paper on the Grand Canyon. He also described, wrote a paper on the earthquake in Charleston, South Carolina, the earthquake in 1886. Oh, he would have been, so he was alive. So he jumped on that. He was the head of division of volcanic geology of the USGS. He studied volcanism in Hawaii, California, and Oregon. He did some work at Crater Lake. Yeah, what did he do? He did. Anyways, this guy was all over the place. And also, aside from all this cool stuff, he coined the term isostasy.
Oh, shoot.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite concepts.
In a footnote to an 1882 review in the American Journal of Science, Dutton coined the term isostasy. He later stated in an unpublished paper, I've used terms isostatic and isostasy to express the condition of the terrestrial surface, which would follow from the flotation of the crust upon a liquid or highly plastic substratum. Different portions of the crust being of unequal density. So there you go. Fun facts about this. But he was a
so
pretty,
when did he do when did he go down
to the Grand Canyon?
Yeah.
1882. He described the Cenozoic history of the Grand Canyon district.
Because let's just first say that, like, as you said, first scientifically described or whatever. So we
Native Americans there for sure, like
thousands of years. But John Wesley Powell, second director of the USGS, he went down in like, I want to say, the late 1860s or early 1870s on his raft or on his boat with his dog, Bootstrap.
Bootstrap,
which is the greatest dog name. It's up there.
Bootstrap is a great right? dog name.
Yeah, I want to say, yeah, when did Wesley Powell, 1869? Yeah. He was like mapping it, though.
Who was the first director of the USGS? The one that nobody remembers.
Yeah. I'll let you know here in a second.
Okay, yeah, but...
As I rack my brain and nothing else. Clarence King.
That's it. Yeah. Nobody remembers him. Powell was like the bee's knees.
Yeah, John Wesley Powell was the second director. He's born in Mount Morris in New York. 1869. Oh, I forgot he only had one arm.
Really?
He lost one in the Civil War. He went down the Colorado River, and 99 days later, emerged out of the Grand Canyon. An American hero.
Wow.
Do you think he was doing for food?
Bootstrap didn't make it.
Yeah. He went in with 12 days. Dunk.
You're not taking MREs donkeys. For 99 days. Like,
no.
He didn't have MREs. 1862.
No, but like, you think fishing. Like, fishing? Okay, I didn't think about that. But I was just thinking, like, okay, so say like you bring ammo, you're going, you know, you're shooting stuff, you're hunting. Like,
In the canyon, it's probably not a ton. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't.
No, it's got to be fishing.
Little canyon rats or something.
Yeah, maybe beavers. Yeah,
I'm sure it was much more plentiful because there was no, it wasn't dammed up at that point. So like, I don't know. That's interesting. That's a really good question.
But that first scientific description, Chris, you said it was 1882.
Yeah, it was 1890. So he was an associate of John Wesley Powell.
Okay. That was also the first unsuccessful attempt to establish it as a national park.
Huh.
With Dutton in 82?
In 82, yeah.
When did the national park system start? Because that was
when Yellowstone was. No, it was before Roosevelt championed it later. He got most of them, but Yellowstone was 1879. Great question. Yellowstone was first established in 1872. Dang. Yeah, and that was.
So 10 years later, they tried to get the Grand Canyon in, and they said no. So it wasn't until 1908 when it was at National Monument by Roosevelt.
Yeah, yeah. And Roosevelt, like, championed all of this public land and public wilderness and did I forget what it was, like the Organic Act. Or there was a bunch of acts that sort of led the way for the monuments. But this, Yellowstone, was my personal boy, U.S. Grant. He was the president
Grant put Yellowstone in. How about that?
He sure did.
Ulysses S. Grant?
Yeah.
And what does the S stand for?
Ulysses, what does the S stand for?
I think it doesn't stand for anything. I don't think he actually had a middle name.
No, it you're right, because his actual first name is Hiram.
Yeah.
His middle name is Ulysses, yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, someone messed it up during the war, and he sort of stuck with it.
You know, there was a story with Ulysses S. Grant that he had a book deal or something like that, and he was selling the manuscript for his book and was really getting shafted, like wasn't going to get any money for this book at all. And Mark Twain, aka Samuel Clemens, came in and was like, "Yo, buddy, you can't take this deal." And then there's something about Mark Twain, like, helped him out and was like, "No, you got to get paid for this thing." And if it wasn't for Mark Twain, like, there's something about how much, I don't know. I mean, somehow Mark Twain got involved with Grant's book deal way back in the day. That Mark Twain, man, he was had his hand in everything.
Yeah. He was an interesting fellow.
He was.
Yeah.
Always looking out for you.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So it's that's kind of the beginning of the I guess the scientific description of the Grand Canyon. Like I said, there was people there for a long time, but so we turned this thing into a national park in 1909. Is that correct? Is that what you said?
Monument 1908, and then actually a national park in 1919.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So hung out as a monument for 11 years, and we made it a national park. Cool. So where do we want to go next with this? Should we go with the age of the Grand Canyon?
Yeah.
Open up that can of worms.
Yeah.
So short answer, we don't really know how old the Grand Canyon is. There's a bit of debate. It could be anywhere. Most people kind of agree that it's at least somewhere between 5 and 6 million years old, but some recent studies suggest that it could be as old as 70 million years, which would put it back to the Laramide Orogeny. putting up the Colorado Plateau. Yeah, so I guess let's get into the, well, you know what, while we're talking about the age, kind of goes hand in hand, let's talk about the formation of how, you know, the origin of the Grand Canyon, you know. So
being a can of worms,
what
the formation of the canyon itself,
what about it,
right? Well, I guess maybe it's more about the age, but well, no, go on. Please tell me how.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to follow your mindset here, your thought process.
Yeah. No.
All right. So basically, here we go. You got the mountains go up, the canyon goes down. That's what I said before. We were joking around before the podcast started. But you know, the Colorado, or excuse me, the Grand Canyon lies on the Colorado Plateau, which is this landmass that was uplifted as a result of the Laramide Orogeny, which put up the Rocky Mountains. So before the Rockies were put up, this was all underwater, and we see this with the underlying the geology within the Grand Canyon. Lots of marine. The majority of the rock exposed in the Grand Canyon is all sedimentary rock of marine origin. So the Rockies get heaved up, drains the Western Interior Seaway, which Jesse, that was known as a close personal friend of the podcast, called that the most majestic seaway of its time. Is that
no? The grandest seaway of its time.
Excuse me, I'm misquoting it. misquoting that there. But all right. So then that gets lifted up. You get the Colorado Plateau get lifted up, and the Colorado River is the river that is.
What's our time frame from this? About 75 million years ago.
End of Cretaceous is what. Yeah, Laramide Orogeny. Yeah, yeah. All right. 70-ish. Yeah, million years. Because Cretaceous ended at 66. So you're right. You're right at the tail end of Cretaceous there. So what happened was the Colorado River was. It was rejuvenated. So we'll go into talk about, there's a process called river rejuvenation. So this is how usually with young rivers, the cross section of a young immature river is very steep. But when you have a mature river, this mature meandering river, the surrounding terrain tends to be very flat. The river tends to erode the surrounding terrain. You get a well-developed floodplain. You don't have these steep sidewalls like you would an immature river. So you see this with the like, for example, Horseshoe Bend is Horseshoe Bend pretty close to the Grand Canyon? It's in Arizona.
Yes. You
guys know off the top of your head?
Not off the top of my head.
No, I don't know, but I thought it was part of the Grand Canyon.
Oh, it's in Page, which is, that's like an hour away, right?
Okay, so yeah, okay, so it's close. You see, like Horseshoe Bend, it's got this like this meandering shape to it. It's called Horseshoe Bend. It's, you know, and
it looks like a horseshoe.
It looks like a horseshoe. I wonder how they got the name. But it's got these so it has the shape of a mature river with this meandering shape. But as these very, very steep and sized walls, it's in a very steep canyon, river rejuvenation. So what happened was the Colorado Plateau was uplifted. The river maintained that, you know, that meandering shape, but it was rejuvenated. Basically, it was raised up above base level, and it starts downcutting or incising into the underlying geology. So that's river rejuvenation. It was basically went from this mature river, this meandering mature river, and boom, gets kicked up and it gets a shot of energy. It's kind of like it pounding a couple Red Bulls, like boom, here we go. And starts incising into the underlying geology. So that's how the Grand Canyon formed.
Now, yeah, I like to think of it as like a buzzsaw. You know, the earth is slowly moving up, and this buzzsaw is just not budging. So it just keeps chipping away at those rocks as the rocks move up.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't want to interrupt.
But one last thing. And so for this this newer, like, so for some of the people, Steve really liked that. He's really
sorry. I had to mute my mic. I was laughing so hard. Carry on.
I just wanted to say this before I forgot. So if the river, if the Grand Canyon is 70 million years, looks like the hypothesis is it was more these unconnected canyons at first and then kind of spread out and kind of connected. So there you go. I'm done.
Yeah. Like, it's yeah. Different. So the unconnected, so you have all these smaller, like, drainage systems or drainage base, what do you call it? Watersheds or hydrology. It's all made up.
Yeah. Watersheds. and by the way, it's not,
I know I'm joking, fuzzy, but yeah. So there, I mean, I guess this isn't the point. I forgot the point I was trying to make. You made, but the older theory, like, is based on, I guess we should say, like, thermochronology and sort of paleogeographic. So it's a little bit more, I don't know, fuzzy on because the further back in time you get, the more blurry it gets, as we all know it to be called, the veil of Diogenesis. So the further back you get, it gets trickier. But so there is some thermochronology, which is, like, you know, as things get buried, they get heated up because of
overburden pressure.
Yeah, and the geothermal gradient, like, the deeper you go, and then you get brought up, so you can tell if they've been heated to a certain temperature. And then, yeah, using some paleogeographic reconstruction and sort of evidence from the sedimentary basins and so on. I'm not really sold on it, but I just wanted, because I'm very fuzzy on Western North American sort of tectonics, especially like the Laramide Valley. I need to read John McPhee's book, maybe. That's my... But didn't he write one on...
It's only like 1,100 pages or 800 pages or something. It's a quick read, yeah. One day read, yeah.
So I'll see Annals you in 6 years. Annals of
a Former World, that's it.
Yes. There so is. The Laramide starts like 70 million years ago, right? Late Cretaceous,
yeah.
And then... So that's like the initial uplift.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then is it... So after that uplift, there's erosion... And so this comes back to our boy.
The uplift, by the way, is no joke. It's like estimated up to like 2 miles of uplift.
Yeah. So, I mean, you think about a Colorado Plateau. What is that? 5,000 feet now.
Right.
So it's still hanging up. Who was the guy that you said in 1883? What was his name?
Dutton.
Yeah. Clarence so Dutton. This is Dutton's idea, right? So the initial uplift, you shed a lot of sediments because you start throwing them up and gravity does not care for that. And so because of the shed sediment, you get continued uplift because of isostasy. It's basically causing some of that other rock to start, because you have all of this crustal material that's building these mountains. And some of that is sinking into, you know, that lithosphere, that thickened lithosphere, because it's so massive, sinks into the asthenosphere a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you shed some of that sediment, I always liken it to like when you sit on your couch and then you create a big indentation on your couch cushion,
mm-hmm.
depending on your mass. And then when you stand up,
my indentation's pretty big.
Yeah. Your couch cushion pops back up to its original shape. You know, as these mountains erode, they remove mass, and so the crust essentially responds to that. It starts to float a little bit higher in the asthenosphere, and that causes a lot of that rejuvenation, that renewed uplift. So we see around mountains sometimes sort of these initial phase of uplift from tectonics and then the secondary uplift that comes from erosion. I don't know if that's the case here. I assume you're the expert, so.
I love how you guys are just throwing this out that I'm I'm the only reason that I'm the expert is because you guys don't want to be the expert today. And I
you
take the short well, straw.
I do remember like the basin and range. 18, this is the thing with 20 million years ago or something like that. That's nearby, but that kind of messed with it too because it like stretched out the crust.
And so this is what gets me, and this is why I think I'm very confused on it, because it's not as straightforward as like tectonics. It's not like two continents colliding, right?
Yeah, no, the Rockies are weird because it's not. Yeah, there's no. It's not two. Yeah, it's not two. Two plates collide.
I remember, you know, Dr. Meyer, the one professor we all had at Temple, I remember one time we were talking about it, and I forget why, but he was like, look at this map. And I was like, all right, it's just North America. He's like, what is this? I was like, the Rocky Mountains. He goes, how do they form? And I was like, I don't know, uplift. He goes, where's the plate boundary? And I go, ooh, you son of a bitch. And, because I all of my training was from East Coast schools. That East Coast bias got me.
Yeah.
Because
because I remember asking the question, like, where did the Urals come from? They're in the middle of everything. So that's a totally podcast, different. But
you're on two different continents. Yeah.
But that, again, I'm with you, Jesse. You want to talk about the Allegheny and.
I will talk
Taconic
Appalachian geology all day.
Exactly.
So there is recently I've been talking about this book. Here we go. How the Mountains Grew by John Dvorak.
And we talked about
yeah. So you're saying that it's the Rockies aren't on a plate boundary, and it's actually related to a good friend of the podcast, the Farallon plate.
Refusing to quit.
I'd like to mention, Chris, you haven't once mentioned hotspots, by the way.
Where do you think I'm going with this? He talks about how with the Rockies about how something about the detachment of the Farallon plate is almost like a trap door opening up, and from this the hot mantle rock rises up and it pushes up the Rockies from down below, basically.
That's like thin skin tectonics, right?
Yeah.
I guess I never heard that term before, but it makes sense.
But
anyways, the Rockies are more inner. It's more what the mantle is doing. More like hot material coming up from the mantle and pushing up through the crust.
Yeah, and that's, and I think that's part of the story with, it's the Farallon plate because it's subducted so shallowly.
Yeah,
I always knew it as. I always heard it called underplating, right?
Because
it's like cruising right at the bottom.
And there's something about how it's taken. So the Farallon plate's been now tucked underneath North America for
it's under Steve and I right now.
It is,
right?
It is.
It's under me down here in Georgia because they're talking about this rejuvenation of I guess that's the correct term, the Southern Blue Ridge, the growth 30 million years ago, the rejuvenation of the Southern Blue Ridge being related to the Farallon plate.
No, 30 million years ago, it wasn't that far, right? It was still out west. There was something else going on, some other sort of Southern Appalachian demon.
Hot spot.
There's all this evidence of this rejuvenation in the Southern Blue Ridge.
I agree. I'm 100% on board with that.
And
for all our Patreon listeners out there, I don't know if you had Farallon plate or hot spot on your bingo card, but make sure you check it off.
Yeah. The number of times that we could bring this back to the Appalachian.
Well, yeah, hotspot might as well just be the free space in the middle of our bingo card.
Okay, let's go up a little farther north of the Southern Blue Ridge. Mole Hill, Virginia. How do you explain that volcano at 30 million years?
I don't think we know, right? I think that's the...
Something's going on there, man.
You're preaching to the choir here. I just don't think it's a Farallon plate. When did the Farallon plate started subducting when?
I don't know when it started.
Laramie orogeny, or is that Greek?
Well, that's... It's before that. It started subducting like beginning of the Cretaceous, like 150.
So then that's end of Jurassic then.
End of the Farallon plate is the beginning of the Laramide?
No, maybe it's just, 70. It was underneath North America and starts basically, I think it's called like, it starts delaminating, peeling off. Cause there's something about the Farallon plate. It's taken a really, really long time for that to either heat up or basically get recycled.
Because it's so shallowly subducted, right? Because it's hanging out right essentially under the lithosphere.
But now it's starting to, like, not now, but it's beginning to start to, you know, peel off.
Yeah. So, oh man, NASA has a really sweet 3D sort of tomographic image of what they think it's doing under North America. And it is...
Send that link over. We'll put that on the website.
Yeah, I mean, it's from the Arbiter of Truth.
So circling back to the Grand Canyon, there's been ice ages, lava flows. How many? At least what? 15? 14? Unconformities?
16? Oh, unconformities, yeah. For the record, I initially discounted the Southern Blue Ridge rejuvenation, but I think I'm on board with it now. From the Farallon.
Wow. All right.
Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, historic moment here at the Geology
You change my mind every time. You convince, you're a snake oil salesman. You got that silver tongue and you convince me every time.
I'm telling you, I can't talk about it on the podcast, top secret information, but the other thing that I told you about, keep on going a little further east, right? What we've worked on. I'm telling you.
Oh.
Yes.
For everyone else that's listening, I have no idea what they're talking about either.
No, I don't want anyone else.
So I feel just as left out as the rest of you. But I looked at, there are 14 known unconformities, like known and documented unconformities in the Grand Canyon.
Really? Yeah. I knew there was the big one.
There's the big one, but there's 14 others. Yeah, but you think about it, like,
but you're right.
It's pretty far south, but it still was part of an ice age about 2 million years ago.
Yeah, all the Pleistocene ice ages.
Volcanic activity has also deposited lava. Some of these built dams, like lava dams, 13 lava dams, blocked the Colorado River.
We've mentioned the base of it is the Vishnu Schist, right?
We haven't gotten there yet, but Vishnu basement rock, 2.5 to 1.8 billion years old.
That's old Precambrian stuff. So you're talking about some of the igneous stuff, which...
Yeah, we'll just gloss over that because nobody likes to talk about igneous.
Yeah.
Igneous is like Bruno. We don't talk about Bruno.
So the big one.
Jesse giggled at that. Chris did not. Do you know what I'm talking about? We don't talk about Bruno, Chris.
I don't know what that means. No.
Taylor's only a year old for everybody's listening. Yeah. Chris's kid. So, but for like 98% of listeners out there, it's from Encanto. But anyway, carry on.
I don't know what Encanto is either.
Once he gets old enough, you're going to start to.
Yeah,
you'll know all the new stuff.
Yeah,
but the when we were mentioning the big one, so you go from the Vishnu Schist, which at its youngest is a 1.8 billion, 1.8. Is that what
mm-hmm.
you said?
Mm-hmm.
And then that the what is it? The Supe group is over it, and that's sandstone and silt. That's a lot of the reds that you see, and that's 300 million years. So you're essentially missing a billion and a half years.
Where did it go?
Between these two layers.
They went to Betson's.
So yeah, is that part of the great unconformity?
I think that is absolutely the great unconformity. Yeah, yeah. Because right through the Grand Canyon. Yeah, they're right there.
Yeah. I'm excited to tell my kids about it. And the thing is, I feel like this is a problem we have, is conveying the sheer scale of that.
Like how there's like a billion years, yeah, missing.
What's a billion of anything?
It's 25% of Earth's history missing.
Yeah. But yeah, we talked about 700 billion elephants. Like you can't visualize, cannot picture.
No, the human brain. The human brain did not evolve to understand what 700 billion of anything. If I say like, go to the store and get me like, you know, get me a dozen apples. Okay, cool. Then, you know, no problem. You can, you know, you have an idea how to carry a dozen apples. If I would say, go fetch me a million apples, like you would have no idea how many tractor trailers that would take.
Yeah. Like $1 million is attainable. $1 billion. Okay. For 99.99999% of the rest of the planet is not attainable.
You guys hear Bill Gates sold off two yachts and he's no longer he's dropping on his list of super rich people in the world.
Think about it this way. So if you were born in the year zero, and I'm not talking about interest rate, just simple math. If you were born in the year zero and made $5,000 a day, you would still not be a billionaire today.
Yeah.
Wow.
So $5,000 a day for over 2,000 years, you're still not a billionaire.
That's
to try to put it into some sort of perspective, when you're saying you're missing a billion years of history, you're missing a whole lot.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's just nuts.
Where did it go?
Yeah.
I know where it went, but it washed into the ocean. Erosion or non-deposition.
I was going to say, it's just nothing. Boring billion.
That was my nickname in high school.
If we could comprehend it, our heads would explode like the scene from the, what was that movie in the 80s? Head scanners?
Yeah. Yeah. I just feel like it was just like a watermelon with a face painted on it.
Yeah, it was not great practical effects.
No.
Yeah, so the Supai, and then you get above that, you have limestone.
Mm-hmm.
And so the limestone, right? Do I have the stratigraphy right here? Supai, I'm doing this from my head. I gotta pull up a geologic map.
The Grand Canyon Supergroup, the Tonto Group.
Wait a minute. Right above the Great Unconformity is the Tapiz Sandstone.
The Tapiz, I forgot. Oh man.
Yeah, and then the Bright Angel Shale. It's all Cambrian stuff.
Yeah.
Supai Group, that's Pennsylvania. That's way up the, that's close to the top.
Jesse, you're way off.
Always coal focused.
So is the super group, is that Vishnu? That's Vishnu.
That's above the Vishnu.
Oh, yeah. So the Vishnu is the basement. Got it.
Yeah, Vishnu is, and you got the Zoroaster granite too, hanging out in there.
Oh, yeah. And so, and then you get ocean above
all the
Precambrian
stuff.
So you get the super group is limestone shale. So that's
the Grand Canyon super group, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where you get like the Unkar group and the base formation.
Yeah.
With that. Sandstones.
You can see. Yeah, lava dams filling the western. You have travertine deposits.
Yep.
Shale. Oh, I forgot there was a whole... Oh, geez. I need to get back into this. I need to read up on this in the next 48 hours because this is what my family wants to hear on the four-hour drive to the Great
Mountain. Yeah.
You're going to put them to sleep faster than a bottle of NyQuil.
Dude, you better put that phone on the dashboard and hit record for all our patrons, buddy.
Wait till I tell you about the Zoroaster Plutonic Complex.
Here's what you do, Jesse. As soon as you get in the car and you start driving to the Grand Canyon, just put this podcast on and go.
Force
them to listen to your own podcast.
Oh man, wait till I start talking about Vulcan's Throne 80,000 years ago. Was the lava cascades? Yeah,
I was on a field trip a few weeks ago, and a student goes, Anthropocene, do you have any thoughts on this? And I was like, well, there's a great podcast on it. And she's like, really? I was like, yeah, look it up. I don't know if the student ever did, but
that's funny. What's Vulcan's Throne?
It looks like it's this volcano that caused lava cascades. Yeah, I don't know. Oh, I've never heard of it.
Oh,
I just dropped a link.
Yeah, I see it. It's just like a what the hell? Waterfall of lava? Like what?
It wouldn't be a water, but yeah.
A lava. That's weird.
This is from the University of Arizona, so I assume they're not just a party school. They're a pretty legitimate source. It's right in their backyard.
Huh.
Go Wildcats.
But if you look at the Stratcom, that's in the link that I'm sure Chris will post on our website, it looks like it almost like stabilized the surface because above the volcano, it's like there's a lot more incision than below the volcano. So it's almost like they poured concrete.
Hold the phone. You're dealing with some cliff and bench topography here, friend.
I understand that, but there's shale, there's sandstone. I get it, but it just, you know.
Yeah, the shale's going to, you know, obviously weather faster than the sandstone is. What is this on? It says the second grade on conformity.
This is where?
Where the great unconformity is, it says on that link you said, Jesse, it says the second great unconformity.
Oh, yeah, because it has the first one between the Vishnu schists and the Unkar group, the Grand Canyon supergroup.
Yeah.
There's the second one. So it has the second one between the Proterozoic and the Paleozoic.
Which is still a big chunk of time, but like, come on.
No, it says the second. Wait, the second one. No, I'm going to look. Are we looking at the same thing? The thing that you sent from it says the second grade unconformity at the boundary between Proterozoic and Paleozoic.
Yeah, and I'm saying if you look under it, they have the great
first grade. Okay, I see it now. Okay. I didn't know there's a second grade unconformity. That's
I don't know.
It's not as great.
Yeah, I
know the second grade unconformity technically has even more time missing.
Yeah, that's the one I always knew between the Proterozoic and the Paleozoic. But yeah, who knows? I mean, this website has some great pictures. But yeah, it's the first time I've ever heard first and second. But then again, like I always say, Arizona's a party school. joking. It's a joke.
isn't Arizona State the bigger party school?
I don't know. I think so.
We're all about academics here, not about party.
Oh, you're right. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Well, how about that?
Jess Seely went to Penn State. They're not known for partying at all.
No.
Strictly academic. The Ivy League of Central Pennsylvania.
Now, I
took me 5.5 years because I was studying so much.
I didn't.
We're not going to talk about how long it took me.
The Red Wall Limestone. I didn't know that there were caves inside.
No, I mean it sort of makes sense, right? Having all of this,
sure.
Yeah, but I didn't know that either. This is a great little website. These are some beautiful pictures. Tell you what. Anyway, stop listening to us. Go to this website.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll post the websites on the on our website, geologyflannelcast.com. Hey Steve, why don't you help us keep the lights on and tell us about this great company that helps
I was thinking about how to reference our perfectly formatted outline for our podcast, but we were off it before we were on it. But yes, I would like to, we do have a perfectly formatted outline. We're just not following it, but I would like to thank our sponsor to the Formatting Formula, formattingformula.com or YouTube.com/C/formattingformula for all of your Word document formatting needs. Apparently they've gotten a huge influx of theses and dissertations over the past couple of months, which I guess you would expect people trying to graduate in May, get that stuff done, but they can always handle the capacity. But make sure you tell them that Geology Flannelcast sent you and that you can pay them in African elephants. Don't actually pay them in African elephants.
They would be so pissed if they got paid in African elephants.
just tell them you can. But seriously, formattingformula.com, like anything for Word formatting, like you just wouldn't believe what they're capable of doing. They can change your toolbars and customize them for exactly for what you need. They can help you get your regulatory documents exactly the way the regulations need them, all kinds of stuff. So formattingformula.com, can't say enough good things about them.
All right. Thank you, Steve. What else we got with the, what else you guys want to talk about with the Grand Canyon? Let's save that link there. I'll put that up on the website.
Is it the biggest canyon?
It's not.
Well, it's not. I mean, we never really said when it started down cutting, right? Well, we alluded to.
Well, I thought we said around 75 million. Whoa.
When it started. It could have started. Some new study suggests it could be as old as 70 million years.
Yeah, like when the orogeny started.
Yeah.
But it hasn't been constant. Say we go with the 5 to 6 million years, which seems reasonable. Has it been constant? Or is it more fluctuating? Like during the last 2 million years, base level has gone up and down because of glaciation, 18 times?
Yeah. No, yeah. From my understanding, once the initial uplift happened, since then, it's been base level changes driving the erosion. That's my understanding of it.
Yeah, generally, you know, things don't happen consistently geologically, you know?
Yeah.
Especially like erosional events tend to be, you know, feast or famine in terms of geology.
And I mean, base level's going up, and it's been going up for the past 12,000 years, right? End of the last ice ages. And we've since started putting dams in.
That's not, so it's no the dams didn't
help it. Pew, 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 pew. No. Yeah. So it's now just stationary. Like, we're not actively eroding. Yeah. What does it do through the canyon now? Is there sedimentation going on? Or is it just such
I think
low
it's
flow?
Neutral, yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, I, you know, learned fun facts about Niagara Falls and how they deviate so much water over the falls now for electric generation that the falls are more or less staying put. Whereas before they started deviating the water from the falls, it was receding as much as like 3 meters a year.
Mm-hmm.
But now they block the ice. They divert a lot of the water. And so therefore the receding of the falls themselves is drastically reduced. So the same thing with the Colorado River. You're probably getting sedimentation behind those dams that, you know, isn't depositing, but you're probably also not getting down cutting because you're damming up all that water. So I don't know for certain, but I would guess that it's net neutral at the moment.
Yeah, it doesn't really have the variables for it right now.
We could get into the politics of the Colorado River, and we could do a whole separate spin-off podcast on that about water allocation and things like that. So, like, by the time the Colorado River is at the end, poor Mexico is getting like
these like triples.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's no erosion going on at that point. There's nothing left. But through the actual Grand Canyon, thank you, Hoover Dam and all the other dams above it. Like, I think the cut rate, is that what you would call it? The down cutting rate would be zero.
Yeah.
But also the sedimentation rate was probably close to zero because there's no sediment really going into the river.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So, I'm trying to look up the numbers right now, but I don't can't find them. But that would be my guess, is that it's net neutral, not down cutting, but also not depositing.
Yeah, I'll jump on that bandwagon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
there is a Trail of Time outdoor geology exhibit and nature trail on the south rim of the Grand Canyon. If you want to look that up. The Apavi,
check it out and report back.
Geology Museum. Cool. So,
Jesse, when you go out there, let us know about the skies, because the Grand Canyon is a dark sky park. Did you know that?
Ooh. Oh, yeah. And so is Zion and Bryce.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, and we're...
Chris, can you explain what that means to everybody who's listening?
It's just, no lights, red lights at night, from my understanding of dark, you know, these designated dark sky parks. It's set aside, or, you know, it's to try to minimize light pollution for astronomy.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Stargazing.
Yeah, when we're up in Zion, we're staying essentially camping, and it's a dark sky place, so I'm pretty excited to see the Milky Way. And
I've never stayed at a dark sky park. I've been to some parts in Wyoming that was like really, really out there. You can see a little bit of light pollution from the like small town on the horizon, but it's pretty cool. So yeah, when you go out there, it's a red light only, because your eyes don't, you can still keep your night vision with red light.
Yep.
White
they use
light.
Them in like submarines and stuff too.
Yeah, yeah. So that's why if you ever see like any astronomers Did they ever have to, if they're ever like trying to look at maps or something like that, they always have like red headlamps or red flashlights so they don't lose their vision.
Cherry Springs State Park.
Yes.
The in here in northern Pennsylvania is the darkest skies east of the Mississippi. And that it's red light only at night there in the state park.
And they even actually, outside the state park, I feel like most of the neighbors and stuff adhere to it, and they have blackout curtains,
and they have huge berms built up from the parking area to where like the astronomy fields where they have a bunch of domes and stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah. So like parking.
How far of a drive is that from Philly?
4 hours.
Oh wow, that's out there. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, 4 hours. It's Potter County, maybe. It's like northern tier central Pennsylvania.
So okay, north of Harrisburg, close to the New York border.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's like an hour from like Williamsport.
Oh, so. That's out there. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's way out there. Okay. Cool.
All right. Well, cool. Jesse and your family have a blast.
Oh yeah.
I'll leave with this one last fun fact about the Grand Canyon. We talked about who was the first guy to raft down the Grand Canyon with the
John Wesley Powell.
Yeah, spent 99 days
with on one there. Arm and a dog bootstrap.
With one arm. We were wondering how is this person getting food. Well, if you wanted to recreate that today, you're going to be in a little bit of a pickle. You're going to go on a little bit of a diet if you try to go 99 days down the Grand Canyon, because fish are relatively uncommon in the Grand Canyon. This is according to the NPS website. Prior to modern flood control measures, the Colorado River provided a uniquely difficult habitat for fish, with heavy silt, frequent floods, temperatures ranging from extreme heat to sub-freezing in the winter. As a result, only 8 fish species are native to the Grand Canyon, 6 of which are found nowhere outside of the Colorado River.
Hmm. Oh, wow. So, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So actually, now that I think about it, that dude probably had some problems finding food.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say like, yeah, he shot dodo birds and
unicorns.
Yeah.
Slayed the last dragon ever.
Short faced bears and giant sloths.
They were delicious.
Yeah. He shot the last North American Columbian mammoth.
Yeah.
Real bummer.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you can't win them all.
Yep. All right. But Jesse, if you had to pick a song to represent the Grand Canyon.
Oh, geez. You know what? I wasn't even thinking about it. It's a good question.
Wow. Did we just stump him?
It's never happened. He usually just comes up with one in 2 seconds.
We got to do some business first. He wasn't ready for this. All right, Steve, you jumped the gun.
I'm sorry.
Plug the website. Go to geologyflannelcast.com, everyone. If you like the podcast, go check out our Patreon site, patreon.com/geologyflannelcast. You can help. Cat was just going after the microphone wire. Don't do that. patreon.com/geologyflannelcast. If you really like the podcast and want to help us out, you can go to that website. We have several different tiers of sponsorship there. We post some videos that only the special Patreon friends can see. No one else can see these except for the Patreon friends. You also can hang out with us during our podcasts. We got a really awesome crew that hangs out for the for the podcast recordings, and we only have the most recent 100 episodes available to download on the, you know, normally if you want the entire catalog of Geology Flannelcast, episodes, you can go to patreon.com. It's all available there. So go check that out. patreon.com/geologyflannelcast. All right. There you go. There's the business.
Nice.
That was good. That was good. I tell you what, just in the last like 3 minutes, I was thinking about like rivers. The Colorado River is stuck in my head. And do you want to know the first song that came to my mind
that's yes.
been stuck there in the last 5 minutes? And I don't know if it works here or not. Usually it percolates a little more. But it's going to be Don't Go Chasing Waterfalls.
Ah!
Stick to those rivers and streams that you're used to.
TLC, nice.
Yeah.
All right.
That's if you want some insight into what came into my head.
But
interestingly
enough, there's probably not any waterfalls.
No, don't go chasing them. There's none there.
Yeah.
You just stick to the river.
Yeah.
That's what John Wesley Powell and Bootstrap did. Hey,
you know, it's like super deep. I like it.
Yeah.
Good pull. I like
it. We'll go with it.
Yeah.
All right.
One day we'll stump you, buddy.
Lisa Left Eye Lopez, rest in peace.
Oh, God rest her soul, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, her and John Wesley Powell hanging out up there.
Yep. She's got one eye, he's got one arm. You know, they're kids. Oh man.
I just had this image in my head, like the end of Happy Gilmore. It's Chubbs,
the alligator.
Abraham Lincoln and the alligator old lady. Yeah. I imagine. Who is it? Powell, Lisa Left Eye Lopez, and the alligator. All just
I was thinking Bootstrap, but yeah.
Bootstrap. All just waving.
Yeah. All right. For everybody listening, thank you very much. We appreciate you. And tell a friend.
All right. We're going to go over to the Patreon now, where I got some more fun facts about the Grand Canyon. So if you're really into this, go check out patreon.com/geologyfinalcast. All right. See ya.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.